My name is Tracy Battaglia, and Battaglia is the correct Italian pronunciation. That's very well done.
I was born in New York.
All right. So let me first welcome you to Boston. I am on faculty at Boston University School of Medicine and Schools of Public Health. So for those of you who are not native to Boston, welcome to our beautiful city. It is a little cold, but I think it's still a beautiful, bright, spectacular fall day, so I hope you get out to explore and enjoy the city. I'm really pleased to be here on behalf of our Prevention Research Center to present to you today some of the outcomes from one of our core research projects, Navigating Public Housing Residents into Cardiovascular Prevention Programs. There we go. So I have no relationships to disclose. I'll lay out the background for you. What is the problem here? The problem is that residents of public housing, probably not surprising to this audience, suffer a disproportionate burden of chronic disease, including heart disease, stroke, and diabetes. And there is increasing evidence that despite close proximity in certain cities to community health centers and academic medical centers, public housing residents face many barriers to accessing health care. And hence, the Partners in Health and Housing Prevention Research Center has been funded by the Centers for Disease Control as one of many prevention research centers around the country. The unique aspect of our center is that we are uniquely focused on the health of public housing residents. The center is an equal collaboration between four partners: the Boston University School of Public Health, the Boston Housing Authority, the Boston Public Health Commission, and the Community Committee for Health Promotions, which is a freestanding community committee that's made up mostly of residents of public housing, as well as some leaders of community-based organizations that work closely with the residents. This Prevention Research Center has done a lot of work looking at the health of this population, and specifically looking at the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance Study in Massachusetts, where we're fortunate enough to have a question about whether or not residents are residents of public housing. We were able to look to document the disproportionate burden of chronic disease in public housing residents, particularly in the city of Boston. And so what you can see from this graph is that regardless of the disease, whether it be hypertension, high cholesterol, diabetes, obesity, smoking, or insufficient physical activity, public housing development residents suffer a disproportionate burden. In order to address this problem, the Prevention Research Center did a community needs assessment to try to understand how we might go about implementing a program to address this problem. We utilized the community readiness model from the Tri-Ethnic Center at the University of Colorado and conducted 15 community-specific readiness assessments, looking at 8 public housing developments and 7 affiliated community health centers in the area to try to understand where these communities were in terms of their readiness to address this problem. We found, not surprisingly, a tremendous mismatch in community readiness to address heart health, as we call it, or these cardiovascular risk factors. And we found that although community health centers have programs to address health issues, community awareness of these programs was limited. This information helped us inform the design of an intervention which we call Project HEART, Heart Healthy Equality Among Residents, the objective of which was to evaluate the impact of a community-based patient navigation program on promoting health-seeking behaviors among public housing residents with cardiovascular disease risk factors. I'm going to walk you through what we mean by patient navigation in a few minutes. So the methods of our intervention is that it was a quasi-experimental multi-site intervention. We did not do randomization, but we did intentional allocation across 6 public housing development residents, which were matched based on size and racial ethnic composition. 3 of the housing developments were controls and had a resident health advocate. I'm going to tell you more about what I mean by that. And 3 had a resident health navigator, which were considered the intervention sites. The intervention was conducted between April 2011 and June 2012, and we looked specifically at change in self-reported health-seeking behavior, specifically participating in primary care visits and participating in community programs to address the health disease. In order to be eligible for the study, you had to be an adult over the age of 18. You had to live in one of the 6 public housing developments. You had to speak English or Spanish. and you had to screen positive for one of the listed risk factors for cardiovascular disease, being overweight or obese, having diabetes, high cholesterol, smoking, or high blood pressure. So the study, we recruited at monthly on-site health screenings that were conducted by the Prevention Research Center. All participants of residents who participated completed an intake survey and were screened for the five risk factors. Educational materials were provided by resident health advocates who are community health workers who staffed the screenings, and I'm going to tell you more about that in a second. Eligible subjects were invited to participate in our Project HEART. So what do we mean by our control sites? Well, the Prevention Research Center at Boston University has a long and rich history of training community health workers that we call resident health advocates. Resident health advocates are the backbone of our program. They are trained annually. A cohort of them are trained annually and put out into the field to provide community health education to residents. And they staff our screening program, which is a way for us to have a continuous visibility in the housing development. So the control site had the trained community health worker on site during the health screening. They provided educational materials and information on local clinical and community programs relevant to the screening. So if somebody screened positive for smoking, they might get some educational materials around smoking cessation from the community health educator that we call the resident health advocate. But that was a one-time sort of intervention at the time of the screening. At the intervention site, there was a resident health navigator, similar resident health advocate, trained in the same principles, but went on to get formal training as a navigator through our state community patient navigator training program, which is a certificate program that trained them in the principles of navigation that largely focus on identifying barriers to care and identifying resources to help community members overcome those barriers to care, and then very importantly, tracking them longitudinally over time. So it's not a one-time intervention, but it's a relationship that's built. So these resident health navigators met them at the screening, got contact information from them, made referrals for them to community programs or clinical programs, much like the resident health advocate would do, but then longitudinally followed them through outreach, mostly through telephone outreach, although it was certainly appropriate to have one-on-one in-person contact and even to accompany them to clinical or community programs. The data sources for this outcomes were research assistant administered surveys that were conducted in English and Spanish. We conducted a baseline and a 3 to 6 month follow-up survey. We looked at attendance to primary care visits, self-reported in the prior 3 months, both at baseline and at the follow-up, and attendance at community health programs in the prior 3 months. And we included community programs around the health diseases that I mentioned, so walking programs, nutrition programs, smoking cessation programs. The analyses were attention to treat. What I mean by that is if you were allocated into the intervention arm, you were included in our analyses regardless if we had follow-up of you from the follow-up survey. We did fortunately have 80% of our subjects participate in the follow-up survey. For those who did not, we did a last value carried forward, which essentially meant if they reported participating in a primary care visit or a community health program at baseline, that was what they got scored as at the follow-up. We did two major analyses. One was a McNamara's test, looked to measure the significant changes pre- and post-intervention in primary care visits and in community program visits. And then we did a logistic regression of all the subjects to look at the independent effect of the intervention between the intervention and control subjects, controlling for some covariates, and I'll walk you through that in a second. So here's our results. 610 residents participated in our screening during that time period. 26% or 159 were ineligible because they either didn't live on site, they didn't have a risk factor, or they spoke a language other than English or Spanish. Among the 74% or 451 who were eligible for the study, 72% agreed to participate in the study. And again, I mentioned that 80% had follow-up 3 to 6 months after enrollment. These are the sociodemographics of our population of 326. You can see that the mean age was between 46 and 52. Most of them were female. There was a nice racial ethnic distribution. There were some differences between the intervention and control groups, and they're starred for you in terms of significance there, and that the control group was a little bit older, and the control group was a little bit less likely to be born in this country. But otherwise, they were similar. Mostly publicly insured, many without advanced education training, and half or more not born in this country. This is the prevalence of the risk factors at the screening, comparing the intervention and the control groups. I think the first thing to notice is that the bars are very high among both groups. There's only one star there signifying that there was a difference between the intervention and control groups. So a lot of disease, a lot of obesity, high blood pressure. I'm sorry, that middle, those middle bars, 50 and 43% is high cholesterol. Not as much smoking, which is good to see. The high rates of diabetes, and among the control groups, there was a little bit more diabetes than in the intervention group. This is the findings from the McNamara's test. So now we're looking at the change pre to post among the intervention group and among the control group in the first outcome of attendance to a primary care visit in the prior 3 months. So you can see in the control groups, we started out pretty high. 72% of the control group, the control group pre-intervention and 70% post-intervention reported having seen a primary care provider within the previous 3 months. In the intervention group, we started at a little lower, 55%, but there was a significant improvement in reported visits with primary care post-intervention. This is the same results of the McNamara's test for the community health program attendance. You can see we started at a lot lower here, not as many people participating in community programs. No change in the control group. The intervention group, we seem to have more people participating at baseline, but a significant jump from 30% to 51% post-intervention. These are unadjusted, just pre and post. This is a result of our logistic regression. There's two models here, one modeling the outcome of primary care, the other modeling the outcome of community program participation, both controlling for age, gender, race, country of origin, and baseline health-seeking behavior, really controlling for the fact of what their rates were prior. And you can see the odds ratio was greater than one for the primary care visit outcome, but did not reach statistical significance. For the community program, though, there was over a five-fold increase in community program participation among those in the intervention group compared with control. There are certainly limitations to our study. These findings represent Boston and may not be generalizable to other non-urban settings or the overall public housing population. Boston is really replete in community health centers that are very closely aligned with these public housing developments, which may explain why our rates of participation in primary care are so high at baseline. These were self-reported behaviors. They were not validated through chart review. And again, we only included English and Spanish-speaking residents. But in conclusion, I think it's fair to say that our public housing residents have a high burden of risk for cardiovascular disease. Boston public housing residents had high levels of primary care visits at baseline, as I mentioned, and we found this patient navigation intervention certainly improved community program attendance, although we did not see significance in the primary clinical outcome of primary care visits. However, we do feel that these findings provide a model that can be replicated to bridge community and clinical health programs. So in closing, I just want to acknowledge my collaborators, everyone in the Prevention Research Center at Boston University, and all of the resident health advocates and residents of Boston Public Housing. I'd be happy to take questions if we have some time.
Okay. Can we hold those to the end?
Oh, absolutely.
And then we'll take questions for everyone if you don't mind, okay?
Thank you so much.
Okay, first of all, thank you again and for keeping to the time so everybody can present and then hopefully everybody ask questions. Our second presenter is Shervin Asari, and again, each of the presenters will present themselves first and then give you their talk to you about their studies. Thank you.